And in his case, a reasonable alternative was acalabrutinib. Acalabrutinib is a second-generation BTK inhibitor. It works similar to ibrutinib in that it is an irreversible inhibitor of BTK. It binds irreversibly to the cysteine 481 moiety of BTK and inhibits BTK in that way. It has a little bit different toxicity profile. It has a narrower kinome spectrum for inhibition and less off-target inhibition compared to ibrutinib. And that may be the reason why we see a little bit different toxicity profile. So we switched him over to acalabrutinib, and he is still not in complete remission. He still has a bit of a lymphocytosis. There's still disease there. I would be very uncomfortable stopping all treatment and observing him. And so that was the reason why I switched him over to acalabrutinib, and he's doing very well with continued disease control and tolerating treatment very well on acalabrutinib. So as you mentioned, acalabrutinib is currently approved in the U.S. for mantle cell. It's not yet approved for CLL, but we're anticipating soon because of the ASCEND trial results being available, which is a phase 3 trial looking at acalabrutinib in the relapse setting. We do anticipate that it will be approved soon in the relapse setting. It is listed on the NCCN guidelines as an option for patients who are intolerant to ibrutinib because there's clearly data both in the relapse setting and the frontline setting showing activity with acalabrutinib. So I do use it as an alternative BTK inhibitor for patients. And the toxicity that we deal with predominantly is headache with acalabrutinib. It happens in a fair number of patients, but we usually can work through that with Tylenol and it subsequently will go away. So he has not had any problems with arthralgias, myalgias, and fatigue like he was with ibrutinib on acalabrutinib.
That's really interesting. There's such a big difference in terms of those, you know, quality of life issues. Globally at this point, you know, what fraction of patients do you find some kind of either toxicity, a bleed, or, you know, some kind of problem that will cause you to stop ibrutinib or maybe a quality of life one like those arthralgias?
Right. So if you look at the clinical trial data, now patients and physicians are more motivated to continue on treatment in the clinical trial setting. So I think those data will show a lower proportion of patients coming off treatment in the clinical trial setting compared to in community practice. And it depends on when you look. So the longer patients stay on treatment, the more likely they will be to come off treatment for some side effect or toxicity. In the frontline setting, it's roughly 30% of patients who come off of treatment because of a side effect or toxicity. It's probably a similar number. In the relapse setting, people tend to be a little bit more motivated to stay on treatment if they've exhausted other options, but a fair number of patients do come off treatment. In fact, more patients come off treatment with ibrutinib because of some side effect or toxicity versus those who come off because it's not working any longer.
I'm curious how many people you've actually used acalabrutinib, and have you used it enough to get any kind of feel from your own practice in terms of comparative toxicity?
Sure. So we have participated in the clinical trials with acalabrutinib, so I've treated a reasonably large number of patients with acalabrutinib. It does have a different toxicity profile. My own personal experience has been that it's much less likely to need to dose adjust acalabrutinib for some side effect or toxicity than ibrutinib. Most of the patients will stay on the 100 milligram BID dose of acalabrutinib without requirement for dose adjustment. And my own experience has been that a lower proportion of patients actually end up coming off acalabrutinib because of a side effect or toxicity. We do see bleeding issues with acalabrutinib at low frequency. Also, AFib has been reported with acalabrutinib. Those types of toxicities that are the low incidence type require a large number of patients to be treated and a reasonably large duration on treatment to get really a good idea of what the incidence is. And there's a randomized trial that's ongoing now of acala versus ibrutinib in the relapse setting where we'll get some idea about the incidence of toxicities and the tolerability between those two treatment arms in a randomized trial.
Yeah, I'm really curious about that trial. When do you think we might see some toxicity data? It seems like that ought to be able to come out fairly soon.
Yeah, probably next year, 2020.
That'd be really interesting. Of course, the other issue is efficacy. And right now, we just have indirect comparisons. Indirectly, do they look the same? Can you tease anything out?
I think for the most part, in my view of the data, they look similar. With acalabrutinib, most of the patients have a response. Most of the responses are partial responses. There's still residual disease in the blood, in the bone marrow. And so also with acalabrutinib, we're talking about continuous treatment.